All right, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show post-game podcast. I'm Michael Remus, joined here with Richard Pollock. Drew Mandel is celebrating Valentine's Day with his fiancée this evening, so I'll be taking over. Now, the Winnipeg Jets took on the New York Islanders tonight for Valentine's Day special at MTS Center. Now, this was a game that the Jets absolutely needed to win against an Islander team that's, you know, below them in the standings, and coming off a terrible showing in Pittsburgh. Well, not terrible from the offensive side, but defensively, when you give up seven goals, you're not going to win many games. Now, coming into the game, they shuffled up the lines, moving Burmistrov to the second line in favor of Antropov for the fourth line, a move that you have been preaching on the show for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, Michael, Burmistrov did some things tonight. We can talk about that first, I guess. Burmistrov did some things tonight that I thought were impressive. He had a really good scoring chance in the first period that he just missed the top corner on. He fanned on it a bit. He drew a penalty later on in the game. We should mention, of course, that he had an awful blue line turnover that caused a 2-on-0 the other way, and Andre Pavlik bailed him out. Overall, he's an offensively creative guy. I didn't love his game tonight, but I thought there were some creative aspects to it, and seeing as how Antropov hasn't really done much lately, I thought it was the right move to make to put him in the top six. Now, I think you and I should discuss whether or not the right move would also have been to break up the Wheeler-Kane, the Wheeler-Little-Ladd line. This is a line that, as far as I can tell, probably been together about 15 to 20 games this year, hasn't done anything. And I'm not sure what Noel's waiting for in terms of that line's productivity. Are the odds in favor of them finally breaking out? Maybe so, but what's to make us think that this line is going to be successful for us extended period of time? And I think we also must mention that the team's greatest offensive success, Michael, has been when Blake Wheeler and Evander Kane have played together. And if you're watching tonight's game, the great 3-on-2 chance caused by, I believe, about 4-on-4, Wheeler going down the right wing, Kane busting to the net, and Wheeler hitting Oduya as a trailer. And, again, that's a speed opening up ice, because Kane's speed puts pressure on the defenseman to back up. Wheeler's speed makes the defenseman back up, and then Oduya can jump in as a trailer. The line combination, I think the move by Noel to put Burmistrov up was a move in the right direction. I still think more moves need to be made.
Yeah, I think we can definitely agree that since the beginning of the year, that Ladd Little Wheeler line has really done nothing. And you'd like to see, Wheeler, who's a passer, be with a shooter like Kane.
Good point.
Moving on to the game, I thought the pace of the game started off nicely. I think the Islanders had a few chances in the beginning, and they traded chances for a bit. The Jets outshot the Islanders for the game 38-25. But the scoring was opened up by an unlikely score. Chris Thorburn scored his third of the year, batted a rebound assisted by his linemates Slater and Glass. And now this is just a goal where Thorburn had a lot of chances similar to this, throughout the season. It really, the pucks weren't going in. Now that finally he's got three goals in his last eight games, and I think it's just a short change of luck, the pucks going in for him.
I would agree with you, Michael. These aren't snipe shots by any means. Back, I think two of at least two of them have been by the backhand variety, excuse me. But I'll tell you this: if you come into today's game and you were to say, "Hey, the GST line will be matched up against the Tavares line. The GST line will play against them, ostensibly every 5-on-5 shift." The GST line will outscore the Tavares line at 5-on-5, 1-0. What would you have said coming into the game?
You'd probably say that the Jets would win. Sounds
right.
Pretty favorable.
And I have to say that I think the GST line played as strong of a game as I've seen them play all year. There have been games where they've shut down lines like, Alexander Ovechkin, things like that. But the Tavares line is playing really well. That's Tavares in the middle. On the left side is Matty Molson, who scored on the power play, so not necessarily against the quote-unquote GST line. And then you have Okposo on the right side. But the puck movement is great on that line, and the GST line shut them out and scored. And to be able to put a puck in the net, get on the board, they hold them off the board, that's more than doing your job. So I think, Michael, what it boils down to is not everybody carried their weight today.
Well, the GST line, they played about 10 minutes each. One of the top leaders, Wheeler on forwards, he played 22:05. Mm-hmm. Bufflin on D, 28:13. Enstrom, 25:44. So, and then Ladd and Little also around 21 minutes. So the Jets played their top players, but it seemed like they couldn't produce.
They ride their horses, and I like that move. I have no issues with that. Wheeler had his spurts today. I thought Little started the game strong and then became invisible after about the middle of the first.
Yeah.
And Andrew Ladd, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, didn't play in the game tonight. It's a troublesome sign when you have your top line, that is your top line tonight, yeah, can't continually create offensive scoring chances. You know, and Evander Kane today had his chances. I know he's become predictable, and he has, and he's got to stop trying the wraparound move because we're in the National Hockey League in 2012, not 1994. But he displayed some speed, went to the net. Obviously, Bermistrov had some chances. We know Wellwood finding the guys. That line wasn't terrible, but they didn't also get 21 minutes of ice time. Right. So it's hard to compare those two, right? What do those guys end up with?
Kane had 20 minutes.
Okay, that's a good sign.
Wellwood played 14:47.
Okay.
And who's the other guy in that line?
Bermistrov.
Oh, yeah. Bermistrov played 17:42.
Okay. So.
And I actually thought there were a few shifts where they played 4-on-4 where Kane, yes, and Bermistrov were together, and I thought they had some of their best chances there.
Well, Evander Kane, I mean, Bermistrov's creativity in open space certainly helps. And I think Evander Kane's speed at 5-on-5 is dangerous. At 4-on-4, it's extremely dangerous. So, I liked a lot about his game today. There were some parts I didn't like. His passing was brutal tonight. He's not a great passer by any means, but he just wasn't finding the open man. And when he was finding the open man, the puck wasn't going where it needed to be. I actually thought, for the most part, Michael, that the Jets were not finding the seam pass today. They were not finding the open man. There were chances there, and they weren't seeing them.
I felt like there was a few times where they would be behind the line, and they'd be holding a puck, maybe looking for an open guy, and maybe just being a split second too slow from seeing him.
And I think that's a factor. I absolutely agree. And I also think that they were on the same page in that they'd be finding the passes maybe a second too late. But then the guy in the middle of the, you know, the if there's a pass from the blue line to, say, the weak side by the goaltender, the guy, the center in the middle would intercept the pass, which means they're not all on the same page. The chemistry isn't there. And there's just not that kind of relationship between the puck carrier and the puck receiver.
Okay. Second period, Islanders open up the scoring on the power play. Matt Molson just had a pass teed up to him by John Tavares, and that line was pretty explosive all night, especially every time Tavares got the puck. He seemed to make something happen.
You know, he did, and that puck goes to Molson, scores. Molson's an underrated player. We talked to Arthur Staple of Newsday about him on Saturday's show, and Tavares is just a tremendous player. He's as good as it gets. In terms of the Jets, we talked about that 2-on-0 before that Bermistrov caused by the bad turnover and the bad change. Yeah. That came right after, so that momentum only lasted for so long.
I thought, in terms of Andrei Pavlich, he really did all that you could do. I mean, the Islanders could have had a few more. I mean, the Jets could have had a few more as well. But
we should mention, Pavlich played a strong game. It was certainly the least of the Jets' problems tonight. Evgeny Nabokov, pending UFA, you know, we asked Arthur Staple of Newsday about that this weekend. He said they probably won't get enough back for him. I don't understand why you wouldn't deal him. He looked good to me. And I know he still looks weird on those angle shots he always did in San Jose. When you go down the wing and you fire a puck, he looks like he's off balance.
Wheeler had one on him from a sharp angle, and he fell over, and it looked weird.
That's not uncharacteristic of him. And the thing is, I mean, overall, I thought he played a great game. I mean, he has 38 shots.
He was named second star.
Second star. And I was impressed by Evgeny Nabokov's play tonight. I thought it looked like a guy who could help a team down the stretch, whether it be Chicago or somebody else.
Now, the Jets had 38 shots, but how many of those were real scoring chances? It seemed like a lot of their shots were pretty far from the outside.
Excuse me, Michael. I had the chances for the game, not including the power play opportunities on both ends, as even. Islanders by one, so essentially even. So I mean, yeah, when you look at 38 to 20, it's exactly to your point. You look at 38 shots for the Jets, 25 to the Islanders, and you see the chances just about even. A little bit of a misnomer there in terms of the meaning of the shots. Also take into account the fact that the Islanders get the lead.
Yeah, and then you're shooting more from
behind. Shooting more, and the Islanders, you know, so that's
And in the third period, you know, obviously a period where the Jets want to come out strong in front of the home crowd. But
tied 1-1 coming into the period.
Yeah, tied 1-1 coming in. So you want to take the lead right away. And minute 36 in, P.A. Parenteau gets a slap pass from Yersina in the slot, redirects it top left corner.
Beautiful pass by Yersina, coming in low up the right hash marks, and a beautiful tip by Parenteau. But I'll tell you this. That third period, I mean, that goal obviously is a factor. I haven't seen the replay in terms of how many blown coverages. There obviously was one there, but we have to mention the fact that this third period was the whole game. I mean, coming to the third, everybody even they had the coming in as a tied game at home against a team below them in the standings. The third period was the game. They come out, they give up a goal in the first 2 minutes, and to be honest with you, they got to play for the remainder of the period, and it was another poor effort in the third period against a team that they should beat.
Well, in the third period, they had two power plays. And I really thought the first power play, I thought they controlled the puck, you know, maybe had a few chances, but couldn't really get anything done. But the second power play was absolutely zero.
And it didn't produce anything, Michael. I'll tell you what the biggest problem was in that power play, and I think throughout the game. The Jets come out in the breakout, in the power play breakout, okay? So we're looking right to left on the ice right now. And the Jets are coming out, and they're going to come out in the general NHL formation in terms of a breakout, and there are varieties of that. The Islanders were forechecking aggressively, meaning there's two forwards on the ice, obviously, and a penalty kill. The first forward, what he was doing on the Islanders was he was coming off the boards, okay? So he was curling at the boards, and he was skating at the puck carrier. And what he was doing is he wants to angle him to the side he wants to. So the Jets were skating up to the other side, and the second forward was pinching in. And the Jets, for whatever reason, decided not to dump the puck in. And so they kept turning it over. And that became a big issue because the Islanders, if it was either high in the neutral zone or lower in the neutral zone, they were meeting the Jet player, the forwards were, trapping them and meeting them, and the Jets, for whatever reason, tried to dangle through. And they didn't get the puck in deep. You didn't reverse the puck. There are options to have on the table. They look like they were doing some scouting report. They were executing well. They were leveling them too. Because these guys all know what's coming. And they were executing well. They didn't get that up. And again, a big game like that, you need mentally focused. That's a mental focus that happened to me. That was great. They were hard. A lot harder than the Jets that night. And then the Jets, lack of execution. And that's just general lack of passion that night. Cost them.
I remember there was one play where Blake Wheeler was carrying the puck, dangling through the center, and then just got sort of on the same line. Normally, that would be easy to just try to dump it in and set it up, but they really couldn't get anything going. And they had it. Those two power plays, that was their chance to tie the game up and go ahead. And I really can't think of any other scoring chances. The three big ones were Burmistrov in the first, and then Oduya had a chance in the slot in the second. And there was Bogosian's post also.
Bogosian's post on the power play there.
On the power
That's
play.
Right. And then I thought Buffalo had a couple of nice tips in the last three minutes of the game.
There was a few nice
that
tips.
Turned into close chances there. But overall, I mean, there weren't too many dangerous chances. And I remember we're also not leaving out the fact that before Buffalo's chances there with those couple tips, Tavares came down the wing, hit the stick, but he beat Pavlik and hit the post.
And hit the post.
Yeah.
So there was, 2 minutes left. Jets pulled a goalie. Really couldn't get anything done, and Matt Martin catches up to a loose puck with a minute left and taps it into, and everyone in the MTS Center cleared the building after that one.
Yeah, they cleared the building, Michael, and it wasn't a good performance, and they deserved to lose, and they lost, and there's only so much you can do. Moving forward, looking at the schedule coming up, you play Minnesota in Minnesota on Thursday, and then you travel back here. It's not a big travel, but you travel back here to play the Boston Bruins on Friday.
Yeah.
Come on, and you got Colorado on Sunday. And, this is a game you have to have. You had to have this game. The Jets are looking like sellers. We've been saying it all year. There's no reason for me to believe that they shouldn't be sellers at the deadline or even before then. I don't want to, cut the hearts out of the Jets fans on Valentine's Day, but I might as well tell them how it is. And if you want to say that you want to pretend that you're competing for the playoffs, I know Toronto's losing tonight to Calgary right now. What's the score?
Pull it out.
I know they're losing right now. And maybe all these teams just keep losing around them. But
coming to the game, Jets were, I think, Florida had about 65 points with two games on the Jets.
Oh, you're Florida, you're not catching.
Florida, you're not catching.
It's a matter of the 8th spot.
And the 8th spot, they were 4 down, so there's 5:43 left in the third, and Calgary is ahead. So it looks like Calgary is probably going to win.
So you're lucky there. Toronto's losing. Toronto still has games in hand, I believe. Ottawa won tonight, beat Tampa 4-0. So not every team around you is losing. Again, I just think it's the odds getting slimmer, especially when you're losing games. If you win this game and beat Minnesota, which is an easy game, you're playing in Minnesota, and lose to Boston, people are okay. Because when we went over the game, the one-loss toss-up game 2 weeks ago on the radio show, not this past Saturday, the Saturday prior, this was a W. So unless you're going into the game of losses, like Boston, and you're beating them on Friday, you're not making up the ground.
Yeah, well, if you want to make the playoffs, you have to have these games. It seems like whenever the Jets have been close, those must-win games, especially those two recent Florida games,
exactly,
were the biggest games. They just haven't been able to pull it off. And it's tough to say, but it looks like their season, in terms of chance of the playoffs, is over.
Yeah, and if Nikola Antropov plays every game like he did in that angry shift in the second period, maybe they'd have better chucks.
I had never seen such a shift from him. He was throwing his weight around.
Yeah, but that shows you one thing. When there's a passion, there's a will, there's a way.
Anywho, you can catch Drew Mandel. He'll be on the big show starting at 6 a.m. for the rest of the week. And we'll be back on the air Saturday from 12 to 3, and we'll be back at you with a post-game podcast Friday after the Bruins game. And also, come on down to the cheer Thursday, where me and Ezra will be there for the Jets game. And that's it for the Legal Curve Hockey Show post-game podcast. Michael Remus with Richard Pollock. Good night and good luck.